Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Bleeding Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, and my other co-host, Mr. Felipe Leon. Gabriel's not on yet. I don't see him on the board here. You did send him the link, right, Felipe?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always send him the link.
Yeah, we don't send it. We throw a kite. A kite, that's what Mexican-Americans do. You throw kites, you know. Anyways, hey, it's good to be back, man. Had a little short little vacation here, but, you know, wasn't a whole lot of stuff to talk about in boxing. I mean, unless you want to bring up Ward and Brand, there wasn't – I mean, what was there really to talk about Andre Ward's performance? You know, I think there's more news right now happening this week. Vladimir Klitschko's talking about going to court because of the drag out for his fight with Tyson Fury. We were hoping that was going to happen in, October? But their demands of certain things is just not feasible with Vladimir Klitschko, the ex-unified heavyweight champion of the world. So, and then you got like, memo. What?
Well, it looks like Tyson Fury and Vladimir Klitschko have a signed contract, and now Tyson Fury's camp wants to change it, including, from what I read, the compensation, their purse. So that's kind of strange.
Right.
And as far as Andre Ward and Alexander Brand, I think it was more entertaining the fact that Andre Ward didn't show up to that press conference after that fight than the actual fight.
Well, here's two things about that, okay? One is, you know, obviously some folks are already thinking, you know, Tyson Fury getting cold feet, Andre Ward not showing up to the press conference, another, you know, sign of cold feet. I look at his head games. You know, I mean, Tyson Fury's camp, I mean, is there a strong possibility there that they're having some kind of concern with this fight? Or is this like a cover-up of trying to delay it even further because maybe Tyson Fury isn't 100%? Or is this just a way of frustrating the older champion? And if it is, it's obviously working. In Andre Ward's case, could it be a little bit of the jitters, seeing that, you know, I mean, he's not really facing or preparing himself for, you know, Sergey Kovalev, right? He's not, you know, the guys that are being put in front of him that HBO is signing off to okay to televise, it just doesn't seem like those are the guys that you would necessarily prepare yourself for one of the biggest punchers at 175, right? But I think too that it's Ward's little way of saying, you know what, I don't, you know, why do I need to be there? I'm going to sign the fight. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. Obviously, everybody's going to criticize me. I think there's a little bit of thin skin. Well, there is. I mean, we know Andre Ward has a little bit of thin skin, right, Felipe? I mean, the guy can't take criticism. You do. He either blocks you or, you know, or tells you to stay in your lane. But I think it was a little bit of both. Thin skin and why do I need to show up? I'm gonna piss them off, main events especially. And I'm going to try to win the mental, you know, game first before I get in the ring. I'm not sure if you really want to piss off the crusher, though, you know?
Well, from what I've understood and what we listened to, if you got a chance to listen to the 3-knockdown rule with our partner here, Steve Kim and Mara Lopez, they actually had Miss Kathy Duba and Sergey Kovalev on there. And it seems like to be more of a behind-the-scenes type of thing with Roc Nation.
Right.
I don't know if you know this, but David Iskowitz, who was leading the charge there for Roc Nation, formerly of Golden Boy Promotions, actually quit his job with Roc
Job,
Nation.
Job, right.
So,
yeah.
So there might not be somebody heading up that ship over there. And so I think there's a little bit of a confusion about how an actual boxing promotion versus a music promotion or anything else that Roc Nation might have gotten involved with in the past, and you know they wanted to have signed contracts and some other agreements before the tickets went on sale. And I believe that press conference was set up so that the tickets could go on sale. But Andre Ward, in my opinion, even if they're having problems with Roc Nation and the whole ticket thing, I think he should have been there. First of all, you have to help promote the event. I mean, this is going to be your first pay-per-view for him and for Sergey. You obviously, if you want to continue in the pay-per-view business, you want this to be a successful pay-per-view. And also, you wanted to sell tickets. So I believe that Andre Ward should have been there. Is it a head game? Perhaps, you know, but like Andre Ward said during that fight or during some of the interviews before with HBO, with that fight with Alexander Brand, after 20-plus years of doing this, if you can't be ready for Sergey Kovalev now, you're never going to be ready. So this whole head game or whatever, you know, if that's the case, then I think it was the wrong move, and I think he should have been there, because at the end of the day, it's prize fighting, and part of that prize comes from those pay-per-view sales and those ticket sales.
You know, the character of Andre Ward, I mean, we've watched him grow from the Olympics and making his first move, going with Roy Jones and, you know, Michael Jordan and everybody else, and going with Goose and Tudor and then leaving them and trying to find his home. Right. And, obviously ended up with Roc Nation as a guy. Ward's character is a person that has to have control. And, so there was a little two things there for me that just kind of stood out. You know, one was that he didn't show up for the press conference. I completely agree with you, Felipe, that, you know, part of the business is selling the fight. But I think that when we go back into thin skin, Ward is very thin skinned. His performance lacked so much that there was a lot of flack about the whole fact that he had a guy that was there for the kill. Right. I mean, he was basically on a platter, and all he needed to do was stick a fork in him, and he couldn't do that. I think there was a little bit of not wanting to show up because he didn't actually want to be asked any real questions about that performance or you know, where that gears up. I mean, because the folks are going to ask him, I think the obvious question is that, you know, how are you going to keep a bigger guy like, you know, Sergey off of you? When you really couldn't show that much power. I mean, he showed some sturdiness, but where do you rate him at right now? You know, Felipe, I mean, where do you put him at? You know, at this moment, if you're a betting man, where does your money go?
I still show Andre Ward as a slight favorite, and I've thought about that since the fight was announced. I think that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
That his his boxing experience, his confidence. I mean, you know, he's proven time and time again that he can take on a puncher than he is. I mean, Alexander Brand, the opponent for his last fight on HBO, he did mention after the fight that he didn't feel any power from Andre Ward, and that he feels that Sergey Kovalev is going to knock him out. But like, we already know it from looking at his record. He's not a knockout puncher. He's not going to go out there and try to knock out Sergey Kovalev. That's not going to be his style. His style is going to outbox him. That's what he's going to try to do. He's going to try to outbox him. And as far as being able to knock out Alexander Brand, I believe that he could have done it. I just think he opted not to. You know, he's that kind of fighter. I mean, we've seen it all before. We've seen the Floyd Mayweathers. We've seen, you know, the Andre Ward. We saw Terrence Crawford with Victor Postol. I mean, sometimes they just want to take, you know, do just enough to win that round and not put themselves into danger, which he kind of, not that he put himself into danger, but he did get a little bit more aggressive in the last couple of rounds in that fight against Alexander Brand. But I think that if he would have done that a lot earlier, he would have stopped them, or at least forced the stoppage. But it's just not in his nature. It's not his style. That's not the way he fights. He would have a lot more knockouts than, I believe, the 15 that he does if that was his style of fighting.
You know, the thing is that you sit back and you look at his style and you look at, okay, there's a mastery there of what he does. But at the same time with that mastery, we got to have, you know, the finale of it. And that's what people are waiting from Ward. You know, I mean, if you have – you know, Brand there, he's a guy that's, like I said, he's sturdy enough to to get past. And the fork was in, you know, that's all he needed to do. I just felt like Ward could have pressed on a little bit more. And I think that's one thing that most fans are turned off with Felipe. It's like the whole Terrence Crawford deal. A lot of people are like, we don't want another Floyd Mayweather. Where that's what Ward is kind of delivering. He was okay, and he played it safe with Brand. He didn't try to go for the gusto. He didn't try to, like, leave an example there so that it can salivate, you know, with other people going like, okay, this is going to be even better. I think that's what people wanted, was that extra boost, you know what I mean? That extra push that there could be a strong possibility that Ward may have a little bit more power at 175. Let's not forget, Ward's not a small guy. You know, he's not a small person. And he's a pretty big dude, and I think that's what people are not counting in with Sergey, is that, you know, they think that, you know, Kobla is going to tower over him, but that's not even the case. And that's why I'm with you about giving Ward maybe the slight edge, because Ward is so tricky, and Ward till this day knows how to kind of nullify your biggest punch and your best punch. But just with that performance, I go back again, you know, that you don't prepare yourself, though, for a tough, rugged guy like Sergey. I mean, Sergey's rugged, but at the same time, this guy does bring a lot of boxing skills. And if Ward is thinking that he's going to be able to nullify the way he's done to Carl Froch, the way he's done to Arthur Abraham, the way he did to Brad, the way he's done Chad Dawson, I think he's in for a rude awakening, because this is a completely different creature that he's going to be stepping in the ring with in November.
Yeah, but I think that his preparation for Sergey Kovalev is not going to be based on Alexander Brand. It's going to be based on these upcoming months when he starts his camp and he gets his sparring partners, and he and Virgil Hunter and himself come up with the strategy of how to defeat Sergey Kovalev, a strong, as confident, you know, champion. I mean, the guy holds three titles in the division, and he's been the dominant force in that division for quite some time now. But we also have to remember that Andre Ward has not lost a fight, whether amateur or professional, since he was 13 years old. And the second thing with that, he won a medal in the Olympics, you know, the last
right.
gold medal that the Olympics have won in the male boxing, because Clarissa Shields won the,
right.
the gold medal in 2012. But and so he not only has a great amateur experience, he has great international experience. He's faced a guy like Sergey Kovalev before in the amateurs. I could almost guarantee you that, you know. So not that, I mean, it's been years and years and years, but like he said, if he's not ready now,
not for 12
he's
rounds,
gonna
though.
Ready.
Come on, not,
he's
not,
not
for
gonna
12
be, if he's
rounds,
not ready
though,
now,
you know.
If
right.
he's not ready now, he's never going to be ready. It doesn't matter if he would have
right.
fought Sergey Kovalev's evil twin brother the last couple of weeks on HBO, it wouldn't matter. You know, he's going to prepare for Sergey Kovalev with his sparring partners and with whatever camp or strategy that Virgil Hunter and himself come out with in the months prior to the fight. You know, that's going to be his preparation, not his last fight or even his fight against Sullivan Barrera, you know. I mean, I think he's just trying to acclimate himself to the weight.
Right. He hasn't even showed – you know, that's a great point that you made right now about the fact that he hasn't lost since he was 13 years old, and he's been all the trials and all that, and he's done. He has the pedigree to stand out. But even in his professional career, he hasn't even looked close to losing, except for the little speed bumps of being dropped, you know, in the beginning of his career. After that, I mean, facing some of the stellar competitions out there, he's been shutting everybody out. That's what, to me, is the far more interesting, the confidence build. I think both of them have it. Who's got more confidence? I think they're equal in terms of both of them not doubting each other. You know, I mean, I think Sergey is a little bit more aware that Ward is tricky. And I think that's why he's been preparing himself by getting guys that I'm not going to say they're completely similar in styles of what he's going to be faced with Ward, but in terms of the opposition, I like the, let me put this out there for you. In terms of opposition, I have to say that Kovalev's got the better opponents. He's faced the better opponents. than Ward. Ward to me has kind of faced the one dimensional guys. Chad Dawson would have been the best test, but that's Gabriel Montoya in the background with all that. I don't know what he's doing. He's whistling.
I'm outside, dog. Sorry, I'm in Berkeley. I just got out of rehearsal, so my apologies for taking you out of doors.
No problem.
I don't necessarily agree with you, David, on that point. Hey, Gabriel, how you doing? Just to introduce my train of thought. You know, Andre Ward, he won the Super Six. Every one of those guys that he's facing a Super Six, or at least was in the Super Six, excluding Allen.
But they weren't so diverse,
Green,
though, Felipe. Felipe, they weren't very diverse fighters.
Every one of them was a champ.
It doesn't matter. Look at, listen, Antonio Margarito was the champ. Very one-dimensional. You know, I mean, Mikel Kessler was very one-dimensional. Arthur Abraham, very one-dimensional. You know,
but
Carl Frotz, very one-dimensional. Come on.
Antonio Margarito was very one-dimensional, but he was a WBO welterweight champion for 5 years. So guess what? He was the best one-dimensional fighter in the welterweight division during
those
5 years.
That's what I'm saying, though. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it doesn't matter. I mean, that has nothing to do with it. I mean, if you can have a championship bout, you know, I mean, if you have the grit to gain it and retain it, that has nothing to do. We're not going to take away the fact that you're one-dimensional. If it works, it works. But what I'm saying in terms of what Koval has been facing from Pascal and all the way down, he has faced guys that are far different from each other, far different from each other in terms of style. You can't disagree with that, Felipe. You know, there's been different styles that he's faced.
I don't disagree with it. I don't disagree with it, but if you look at both resumes as professionals, I think that Andre Ward has
great
resumes. A better opponent.
Right. No, I'm not discrediting their resume. What I'm saying, though, I'm not really discrediting. What I'm saying is that if you look at it, I like Kovala's resume a lot better because it's not this one style of fighter that he's been facing. It's been different from Bernard Hopkins, from Pascal, all the way down. They have been different looks. And to me, that's a guy that's willing to challenge himself all the time. Ward may not – I'm not saying Ward wouldn't have not done that. Because obviously, if he's taking on Kovala, he's willing to do that. But I think what's been available for him has been one-dimensional champions. I could be wrong, but that's just my opinion. Gabriel, what do you think?
I think it's tough, you know, because you could really dissect both resumes. You know, I mean, like Hopkins, I don't know if anybody's had more miles on them than him. Although he had never really been beaten up. He hadn't been in serious wars, but he'd been going 12 rounds for a long time.
Right.
And he was, you know, 77 years old when Coppola finally beat him. legitly was, 50, right? So.
Right.
But you look at the guys, it's hard to say, because at the time I thought I was there ringside for Abraham and Ward. And, you know, Ward or Abraham looked like kind of a shot fighter or just kind of at the end of the road. But then he goes on to pick up another title and has a bit of a run of several years. He's more active than Andre Ward. So, it's hard to say that was, you know, an easy win. I think stylistically it was a great win for Ward. And he is the only guy that didn't travel out of state. He did for Frotch, but for the majority of his fights, he got to fight, you know, in his home state, home turf. That was an advantage for him. But you look at Kessler, who isn't fighting anymore, had a lot of miles on him heading into that fight. Then Bika and Green was never really anything. I mean, his big claim to fame is beating Jadon Codrington, who was a prospect at best, more of a suspect, and really, you know, getting knocked out in 18 seconds. He's not really a suspect. He did it. He's not that good. You can break it down, but at this moment in time, it would seem that Kovalev is the sharper guy, more active, has looked better. He didn't look great in his last fight, but it was the right kind of fight. I mean, two guys facing awkward, rugged dudes. And I thought Kovalev had a rougher time of it, got hit a little bit more, whereas Ward barely got touched. But, you know, at least his guy, Chalemba, is known for being a rugged customer. I mean, Alexander Brand, did anybody know who he was? You know, no. I mean, that was a terrible fight.
He didn't have a brand.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, Branding is not his middle name. It's just, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, the Chalimba fight with Kovalev made me go, oh, God, you know, I don't know about this. And then this fight showed me that Ward still can hit and move, tie you up, move away, avoid a fight. He's still really good at taking away the fight from you and
right.
just doing what Floyd does. And I, you know, people, there's something about like athletic fighters that people assume, well, you know, especially if they're defensive like that and kind of have a negative style, the way Floyd did in the latter part of his career, and the way Ward does now, most of his career, that their chins must be bad, that there must be something wrong with them. And maybe it's just that they figured out this way of winning and using that to their advantage, that athleticism. And it isn't about their chin. And I think people,
right.
the more they hate on somebody, the more they think they're vulnerable. I think people are making a big mistake if they think that of Andre Ward. I get the sense that he's going to outbox Kovalev. If Kovalev can't hurt him or touch him consistently, the fight's over within 3 or 4 rounds, and we're going to go into cruise control. Or snooze control.
Right. We could really end up watching another Crawford and Postal fight all over again.
Exactly.
Easily.
Oh, God.
I think that's it.
Easily.
I think that's
nothing
think that's,
easy about
I
that.
I think that's what I was going to say, that if Andre Ward can do what Crawford did to Victor Postol, if Andre Ward could do it to Sergey Kovalev, which take away the right hand, which Terence Crawford did, obviously, very effectively, that's the end of the fight. You know, that's what we're going
right.
to see. We're going to see if Sergey Kovalev is going to be able to close off the ring better than Victor Postol did against Terence Crawford.
Hmm. Well, you know,
the difference is really heavy hands. You know, Postol is not that guy. You don't have to worry about his power. You know, and I don't think he has the feet. You just look, watch the feet of Kovalev versus the feet of Postol. You know, dude crosses himself up and looks like shit sometimes. And Kovalev has some pretty good feet for the most part. So I just wonder, is he going to get hit at distance? Can he, you know, he gets hit flush. Will that matter if Andre does that to him?
I think Bernard Hopkins kind of laid out the groundwork that if you're a little bit crafty, I mean, he didn't knock him down or anything, but didn't he knock him down like in the 10th or 11th round? I mean, it took that many rounds for
it was
Sergey
the second
Kovalev
round, wasn't it?
Finally, no, I think it was later in the fight, wasn't it? Wasn't it like almost at the end of the fight that he knocked him down?
No, it was the beginning. It was like the second round because that's why Hopkins kind of switched his game plan. You know, didn't really want to engage with them. I'd have to go back, but I think it was the second round or like the first round or second round, you know.
But that's the thing is, like, he was able to do certain things, Bernard Hopkins. I mean, he went to 12 rounds. He lasted the 12 rounds, you know. So I think that a more athletic, younger Andre Ward is going to be able to do the same and do it better. So that's why the factor here, the thing that we don't know until that first bell rings, is that what's going to happen when Kovalev does land that big right hand and hits Andre Ward flush, if he gets to do it, if Andre Ward is still going to be on his feet? That's the question we're not going to get answered until
right.
that bell rings.
You know, I got to say this, you know, because the one thing that most guys that have a jab or are looking to land their power shot, when they're in a big mega fight like this where there's a lot on the line, they tend to kind of change their, you know, their style or character when they get in that ring. I think, you know, Sergey's got to go in there and just be himself, you know, allow his hand, allow his jab to create the openings and let his hands go. Because if he sits there and tries to do what like Victor Postol did with Crawford, which is paw the jab and try to look for the perfect shot, it's going to be Andre Ward 100%. Those four first, the four first rounds are the more crucial rounds of who dictates the complete rest of the night of the fight. So, anyways, hey, let's talk a little bit about Antonio Margarito. He just fought this past Saturday. I didn't get to watch it until Sunday. I had a DVR it because it came out to like 11 at night, man. I was tired, you know. I'm getting up there in age there, Felipe and Gabriel, so it's kind of hard for me, you know. But, hey, I got to tell you this, man. Hey, let me just throw this out there. Dude, congratulations to Antonio Margarito. It was actually a pretty entertaining fight. But, you know, Ramon Alvarez, the older brother of Canelo Alvarez, dude, I didn't think that he was I honestly did not know that he was going to be that bad of a fighter. He just did a terrible job, man. I mean, you know, Margarito was actually tripling the jab, which is something that's not really rare that we watch him do, but he was jabbing. But at the same time that he was jabbing, he had his right hand down all the way down to his hip. So the right hand, his eye that's all messed up was there for the taking. He didn't know how to set that up. His younger brother Canelo was telling him what to throw and how to land it, but he just couldn't really get, you know, bullseye that bad eye. I mean, he did it a few times, but just not enough, you know. And Margarito was able to just kind of be Margarito, I think a lighter version of him. But if this fight is what's leading up to him and Canelo, it's going to be a showcase for Canelo, man, because Margarito is just there for the taking, Felipe. I don't know what you thought about that fight Saturday night, but I watched it and I'm like, wow, you know, okay, it's a good thing he won, but was it a really, really good thing for him to win this fight?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, we saw some things that Margarito, we hadn't seen from him in a while. I mean, obviously his style is prone to receive a lot of punishment, and obviously the proof is in his face with that eye. But he did do a couple of different things. He used a little bit of bending and waist movement to
right.
slip some punches, which was pretty impressive. And also, like you mentioned, he boxed a little bit. If I could use that term, he boxed a little bit more than we ever seen him do. And he was. I really liked that straight right hand to the body, which we kept throwing. He's been working
right.
with the
yeah,
new
no,
trainer.
I,
yeah,
yeah.
He's
did.
Been working
I
with the
that.
New trainer and his. Yeah, he's a virtually unknown guy. I mean, I know him. He his son, the trainer's name is Juan Estrada. He has a home gym in his house here in San Diego, and that's where Margarito trained. And his son used to be a fighter, but he ended up going back to school, and I think he received a degree and everything, so he stopped fighting. But I think this guy has been, you know, doing some changing up Margarito a little bit, and it's good, you know, a little bit more defense. I just don't think that the Canelo fight is something that may happen. Canelo was interviewed here in Tijuana. He was obviously here in Rosarito, actually, for the fight. And when he was asked if he was willing to face Margarito, he said no. But obviously, anything can happen. Margarito said that he's willing to face Canelo if Canelo is willing to face him. But if he's not, then he wants a bigger fight. He wants big fights. That's what Margarito wants. But you know, we discussed this fight yesterday on my Spanish language show with my co-host Renzo Novara on Boxeo Tijuana. And the one fight that I would love to see, you know, at this point,
Cotto.
Will be Margarito against Alfredo Angulo. I would love to see that fight.
Oh, well, I don't know. I guess we got to see how Angulo looks. Let's see how Angulo looks. You know, his upcoming
fight.
You,
sir, are a bloodthirsty ghoul.
He's fighting. Hey, I mean, Alfredo Angulo is fighting
but
Freddy
the Matrix,
Hernandez.
Is it going to be moving like bullet time?
Hey.
They're going to just be moving super slow?
They don't call Felipe the Cartel Leon for nothing, bro.
Yeah.
Let me tell you that.
Hey, Antonio Margarito and Alfredo Angulo, for that fact, they're not retiring anytime soon until they make some good money or
right.
they get, you know, massacred in the ring, which, you know, most of the time goes hand in hand. You know, that would be, you know, I mean, if we're going to see him fight, at least let us see him in good fights. You know?
I want to see how Angulo looks first. I would have to
well,
see, I mean, because
Freddy,
that Audi was
fighting,
not that great. Right.
Yeah, and he's fighting now Freddy Hernandez, which, I mean, if he can't get past Freddy Hernandez
yeah.
at this point, then, you know. You know,
yeah, you got to hang them up, bud. You know, that's
exactly.
it. That's the, yeah. You know, I mean, I just don't want to say, you know, I mean, Canelo,
well, you know,
I think Canelo
you know
knocks
Margarito,
him out in 4 or 5 rounds, you know?
You know who Margarito called out in the TJ newspaper? He called out Eric Morales because Eric Morales has been criticizing him a lot lately whenever he gets a chance because of the way he's looked his last couple fights. And Antonio actually... you know, called him out and say, hey, man, if you want to keep talking you stuff, you know, let's get in the ring and I'll show you who Antonio Margarito really is. So I thought that was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, let's entertain that. You know, I mean, it's like entertain
yeah.
the whole fact Gamboa is calling out Cotto and saying that he's possibly rumored to be the opponent. I mean, when I heard that, Gabriel, remember when you called me and I go, I was like, shit, I'd rather see the Juan Manuel Marquez fight with Cotto. You know, if they weren't both so deep, so much divas, to me, that's more of an entertaining fight than seeing Yoerky Gamboa jump up and wait a fight. I don't even want to picture that, you know? It's just, it doesn't, I don't know.
Well, I guess if there's a seniors tour, I just, you know, Angulo just hasn't looked good to me. So, and Margarito doesn't look that good either. I mean, you could call it, it's now or, you know, it's never too late. But sometimes it is, you know. I just, there isn't much I want to see from Margarito. Like, the fight was more entertaining than I thought, but they should call Canelo's brother, you know, Space Jam. Because he's like Canelo, if he got Space Jammed and, like, lost all his ability to box, he is not a good fighter. It's like, dude, what the hell?
Was bad.
Why is it? I mean, I don't think Canelo's all that great, but it's like, how come he had a jab and the other guy didn't? But I guess that's, well, I would say that's kind of like the Chavez Jr. and Omar, but both of them suck. So I don't know. It's weird. Boxing's like that, I guess. I don't know. Cotto, would you go with the Cotto fight? Would you like that fight? Would you care? Seeing it a third time?
I don't know. I don't care for it. I wouldn't care for it. I mean, why? The way that Margarito looks right now, in terms of what Cotto's a much fresher fighter than Margarito, you know?
I'd rather see Margarito against Cotto than Cotto against Gamboa. I'll tell you the truth about that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, just a side question about people. They really shit on Cotto. Granted, he kind of whined and he was a bit of a diva. He's always been a bit of a diva. But do you think the advent of, like, social media and how the media seems more, and I use that term loosely, media, is more focused on contract negotiations and trying to play gotcha with what a promoter said when, and, you know, when Canelo, like, for example, is going to fight Triple G and asking him the same damn question about it, and then every time he maybe about and say, see, he's never going to face him, all that stuff. People on Cotto more than how he fights in the ring. Is that a clear question?
You were breaking up a little bit.
I see what he's saying. He's asking if the media, quote unquote, the media is concentrating more on, you know, the stuff that goes outside of the ring more than the stuff that goes inside the ring. But as far as the Cotto thing, I mean, the last time he fought was in November, you know, and he's trying to find an opponent and he just can't find one. I mean, he's talked to Marcus, he talked to Kirkland, he talked to Brandon Rios. I don't know if he spoke to Gabriel Rosado or any of those guys, but, you know, there's really not much to talk about what's going on in the ring if there's nothing going on in the ring. But as far as the Gamboa-Cotto situation, I kind of want to give Cotto the benefit of the doubt because Gamboa's calling out Cotto. He's saying that he's available for that fight because Gamboa doesn't have anything else. Who else is lining up to fight Gamboa, you know? So he's calling him out, and Cotto hasn't said, I haven't seen anything, a response from Cotto. Cotto might be thinking the same thing we are, like, this guy's crazy, you know? So I want to give Cotto the benefit of the doubt until he comes out with some kind of official statement regarding that.
If Cotto was to come out, what do you guys think about this? If Cotto just came out and said, listen, I just want to do a farewell fight, that's it. You know, the way like they did it in the 80s, even in the 90s, you know, you would have a champion like Julio Cesar Chavez was like, this is my farewell fight. You know, I'm going to do a tour. I'm just going to fight guys. So if you never see me live, you can come and see me. I think that's the unforgiving part that I would have if he would accept Gamboa to say like, hey, I'm just doing a farewell fight. And this is the end of my reign. I'm no longer going to come back. I want to retire, but I want to retire going out into the sunset. What do you guys think about something like that?
I don't have a problem with it. I think it's weird. I mean, I've never been really a Cotto guy, but I think it's weird that people shit on him so much. And he doesn't look nearly as bad as, say, Roy Jones or Margarito. I don't even think it's the same conversation in terms of him ending his career. You know, maybe he just doesn't fight with the same passion anymore. And so maybe that's why Margarito gets a pass. But I see, like, a certain, for lack of a better term, demographic that that seems to, you know, give certain people a pass, but then they'll crap all over somebody like Cotto. And I tend to think it's because of the way he's covered. And even this Gamboa thing, it was, people were running with it like it was a story. And all I thought it was Gamboa campaigning in the media for himself and saying, hey, I'll take that fight. You know, and and media doesn't vet anymore. They always do one side of the story. They'll get a couple quotes. They'll get no context. They'll not call anybody. They won't call the other side, find out anything. They just, ooh, I've got a, you know, Gamboa quote. Let me write a story around it. They just don't do their job. And so we get situations like that where we're discussing the possibility of a fight that doesn't really even exist.
We haven't even heard if HBO would even accept Gamboa
exactly.
I know.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think there's still so many options out there for Miguel Cotto to go through. I mean, the names that he obviously had on that little short list that HBO had turned down. I think we forget that Miguel Cotto is with Roc Nation. He's more of a free agent. I think what screws him up. I think what screws up every fighter when they sign him with a promoter is the limitations of who you can go after, because I would still like to see Miguel Cotto being called out by some of the PBC guys. I mean, I don't understand why Terrence Crawford's name's not being brought up for Miguel Cotto, you know, at 140, 147. You know, I'm not even at 140. I don't think Miguel will make it, but what at 147? I mean, if you already got him into the pay-per-view, what was that?
He doesn't make 47. He doesn't make 47. If he made 47, he'd be fighting Marquez.
Well,
that's true.
The lowest he was willing to go was 49.
How about Timothy Bradley?
The thing too is when you're so obviously looking for a fight that you want, that you're going to win, why should anybody be interested? Oh, well, I guess see Floyd Mayweather's career for that answer. I don't know.
Right. I mean, Timothy Bradley, too, is in that same boat right now. He just re-signed with Top Rank, but, you know, where did he go? I mean, who's he going to fight? What do they got lined up for him?
No shit.
Where was he going to go? Let me ask you this. Where was he going to go, really? Because some of the folks were like, oh, that's good. He signed with Top Rank. But let me ask you guys, where was he really going to go? Did you see him jumping ship to Golden Boy or PBC? I think the only option he had was to stay with Top Rank.
But I wouldn't
think about this.
PBC.
Think about this. He fought in April. I don't think we're going to see him again this year. I mean, there's not. Where would you put him on? You know. Where's the date? Is he going to go down? Is he going to go back to HBO?
Which is why
and not
Crawford
be
Bradley.
I mean,
Crawford.
I don't
Bradley.
Know, man. That
I don't see that
Bradley.
Happening.
Yeah. And when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? I mean, we're moving into September. You know, September is pretty much all booked up. October, you know, if it was going to happen in October, we'll be hearing about it now. So are we going to see Timothy Bradley again in 2016? I don't think so.
I would like to hear them talking about Cotto. Bradley versus Cotto was a great fight, you know. Like to see that happen because Bradley's been talking about moving up. I mean, this was a fight that was mentioned, just a year ago. And Bradley could move up. He still can gain that weight. 150, 152, I see it happening. Why not?
Yeah, it just depends on the politics between Top Rank and Roc Nation.
Yeah.
And
that's
Miguel
what I said,
Cotto,
limitations.
You know, maybe Todd DeBuck can make that fight.
That's a big buzzkill. That's a huge buzzkill is Roc Nation. Who wants to do business with those guys? Nobody.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, especially with what's coming out between the Kovalev Ward fight.
Jesus, I mean, you know, have you ever? Somebody asked that, and it didn't immediately come to mind. They were like, "Have you ever seen that where, you know, has a fight ever gone off when one guy didn't show up to the press conference of a scheduled like HBO level fight?" And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Gamboa pull a no-show with Rios?
Rios, yeah.
Yeah, in Miami. I think it was in Miami.
Yep. And then that fight didn't happen. So.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Well.
Yeah, really weird, really, really weird tactics and stuff. Hey, Manny Pacquiao and HBO, looks like they're not going to do a pay-per-view together. I read up what Steve had to say, you know, saying that it doesn't mean it's the end of the relationship, because Bob Arum said that, but it obviously is not going to go on HBO pay-per-view. Hey, that kind of sucks for Jesse Vargas, man. He gets the sweepstake, and he doesn't get the HBO pay-per-view stage. Let me ask you this. What do you guys think? Where does it go from? If it's still going to be picked up by pay-per-view, which Top Rank has done perfectly fine doing pay-per-views on their own, but do you guys think it kind of undersells that market there of not having the HBO brand behind it? Or does it matter?
Well, I mean, as Steve pointed out, I mean, the last pay-per-view of Pacquiao didn't do very well, so I don't even know if having an HBO – what is HBO's brand at this point, you know? How much cachet does that have anymore? Oh, this is an HBO fight, so therefore – I mean, we just saw word brand, which was, you know, I'm still trying to scrape it off my shoe. So,
right.
You know, I don't know, you know, I just – That's another one, is that people like Steve was even saying, like, aren't you kind of tired of seeing Pacquiao? And to me, he doesn't look that bad to me. He doesn't look shot. I mean, maybe the thing that's missing is that fire, but I thought he fought pretty good against Bradley. I wasn't bored.
I wasn't bored, no.
Yeah, I think with the right matchup, he can, you know, I think people want to see him in a relevant matchup, but do you really, after seeing Crawford's last fight, I don't know if I want to do that to Pacquiao. I don't want to do that to myself. Crawford didn't make me want to see him again, you know? And
how
I
much,
like Crawford, you know? But,
how much pushing do you think? Philippe, let me ask you this, because you've dealt with, you know, in that side of the fence, okay? How much pushing do you think Top Rank is going to have to do to sell this Pacquiao and Vargas? Just because of the fact that a lot of folks have been dumping on Vargas. A lot of folks are not really that excited about Jesse Vargas. I think Vargas is a formidable opponent for him. He's got a good right hand. He's strong. He's been able to rock guys that have outboxed him. He's kept himself there. He's got himself to this point. But is it really that hard of a sell for a Mexican American against Manny Pacquiao? I mean, this would have been an easy sell back in, you know, 2003, 2004, 2006. But is it really that hard of a sell right now for 2016?
Not all Mexican Americans are created equal, you know.
And one thing that helps Jesse Vargas, I think, is that he's really fluent in Spanish. So if Top Rank really wants to take that and run with it, and really put him in front of, you know, Spanish speaking Mexican people, put him on the radio stations and things like that, you know. I mean, is it going to sell 500,000 pay per view buys? I don't think so. You know, is it gonna?
Right.
Could it do better? Could it do better than Timothy Bradley, Manny Pacquiao in April? I think so. I think it could do better. I think Jesse Vargas is a more sellable opponent. Plus, he's the champ, and he's coming off a great win on HBO, so he might be a little bit more known. As far as the HBO branding of the pay-per-view, I don't think it makes a difference at this point with Manny Pacquiao. I think the only thing that helps with HBO is that, you know, you might get a little 30-minute show here and there that's going to be played to a large audience, to a large captive, perhaps boxing audience, which might be an HBO subscriber. But other than that, I don't think people are going to say, you know, I'm really going to buy this pay-per-view because I want to be able to listen to James Lampley and Roy Jones Jr. You know, I don't think that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think I'm with Gabriel here. It's like, we've seen enough of Manny. What is the real laid out plan for his comeback here? I mean, is it really because there's a strong possibility Floyd may make a comeback and they're gonna do a rematch? If these are the opponents, if the last fight did such a dud of numbers, and if this fight, I think this fight here, being off of HBO, if it was. I think you're right. It's going to be another dud amount of numbers. How is that going to be on the weighing negotiating table for Manny Pacquiao? To me, they need something that is more of a breakthrough to kind of show people, hey, I'm still here. I'm still dangerous. And I still, you know, can create that fire that supposedly is no longer, which should be taken off his trunks here, Gable, which he said that he has no fire. There's the trunk, you know, the no fear. Should be taken off, right? But but I'm not even certain top ranking Bob Arum or any of the staff know where they're going to go with this. Is to me, it looks like a clear. I think it's very clear that they're very short in the stable of fighters, so they got to hold on to whatever's available to keep the wheel spinning in their company. Could I be wrong about that?
Yeah, I don't think they're bleeding money, you know, but it is a strange thing. I mean, they're a young company and an old company, and there's not – Verdejo has turned out to be a dud, right? So
yeah.
Crawford, in his first pay-per-view, took a giant crap entertainment-wise, you know, but it might have been a case of look good in this one, you know, or, you know, win this one, look good in the next one, which basically it was. But – you know, Crawford didn't do anything to ingratiate himself to people. In the media, there seemed to be kind of a cooling off, if anything. So, you know.
Because there's nothing there for Crawford. There's literally nobody out there right now, I think, that folks
that
are kind of
have
like,
access to.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that everybody's like, oh, dude, this is a lead up. You know, let's forgive him for the last one this because this is going to happen. I mean, the only name that was brought up was under the Frampton and Santa Cruz fight was Mikey Garcia. And I was just like, what? Like, whoa, slow down, guys. You know, take off the cowboy hat here for a little bit and let's just see what Mikey can really do. Because I wasn't that far impressed of his performance. We knew the writing was on the wall, what he was going to do. And he did it. I still see that there's still a lot of there for him to regain himself back to even kind of put him in the names of fighting the top five level fighters out there at this moment. I don't know. What do you think, Felipe?
Well, the lead up was Manny Pacquiao. I mean, that's what everybody was expecting. Everybody was expecting Terrence Crawford, if he got past Victor Postol, which he did very easily, that
right.
he was going to be the next opponent for Manny Pacquiao. But, you know, Michael Conn got in the middle of that.
Right.
You know?
And we knew that. We knew that, though. Anybody that's watched the sport, we obviously already. I mean, I was saying it before. I was like, why would he? Why would he even move down in weight? Why would he? You know, literally allow the door to be completely open for Crawford to walk through. That made no sense to me because to me they would have been, you know, for Team Pacquiao to agree to everything that Crawford was asking for. Would have been the laydown of saying, yeah, we're an old fighter. We're the old news now. That's why I knew that it wasn't going to happen because Pacquiao and them believe they're not old news. They are still the relevant news of today, right?
I think that was more of a push from Bob Arum because I don't know if you guys saw this, but after
right.
Michael Conn's revealed to the LA Times that it was going to be Jesse Vargas and not Terrence Crawford for the November 5th opponent, Bob Arum actually went and announced that wasn't the case, that he had to speak to Manny Pacquiao directly and not go through Michael Conn, but he wanted to speak to Manny Pacquiao, and that's how he was going to travel to the Philippines, and that Terrence Crawford was still in play. What I got from that announcement is that Bob Arum was really pushing the Terrence Crawford fight because, in my opinion, it's in better interest for Terrence Crawford to beat Manny Pacquiao than it is for Jesse Vargas
right.
to beat Manny Pacquiao.
Well,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's why Bob Arum was actually pushing that agenda. But you know, Manny Pacquiao and his team decided not to go with that. Now, did Bob Arum offer him more money to fight Terrence Crawford than to fight Jesse Vargas? He might have. Manny Pacquiao, you know, he did the right choice for him and not for top rank or Bob Arum. In choosing Jesse Vargas because, you know, because of the style. He's not going to have to look too far to fight Jesse Vargas.
I think it's fair to say now, back in the day when Manny Pacquiao was asked, are you going to fight so-and-so? And he always say, I leave it to my promoter. I fight who he tells me to fight. I think that now is out the door, you know.
That was a really good Manny Pacquiao.
You like that?
Okay. A bit racist, but pretty good.
Oh, come on. Well, here's a funny thing. Check this out. And this, I was thinking about this the other day. Because when, the right time, like Cotto and Margarito and Pacquiao and all these other guys, they had the money, the cash and cow to chase after. Now that everybody, Pacquiao's, bank account is kind of slimmed down in terms of pay-per-view numbers. Floyd is not around. There's not a definite cash money cow out there right now. So everybody, in my opinion, even that's why I kind of feel bad for Jesse Vargas, they all got to kind of work a little extra, to kind of show why they belong on this platform. To me, it's interesting because I want to see, I think this is the perfect time where you put a bunch of guys in a pit and throw one single bone and see who's hungrier and who's going to do what they got to do to get to that bone. But like we mentioned, the promoters, they've kind of had this, they've made this limitation, and we're not going to be able to get this, this clear image of who's going to be the guy that everybody's going to be trying to go after. I know they're trying to make Spence, they're already saying, PBC, is he the next Floyd Mayweather? I just keep saying, shit, man, I don't want to see another Floyd Mayweather. I don't want to see that. Floyd's over there the Rio games, and they're mentioning this, that kid that is in the Olympics. This guy is going to be the next Floyd. I'm like, nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see none of that. I want to hear something completely different than that. What are you going to say, Felipe?
I was listening to you talking, and it brought up an idea, is that hopefully we're moving into the direction of what pay-per-view was really started for, and not to pay to see Canelo's next fight or Manny Pacquiao's next fight, or like Gabriel has mentioned, Floyd Mayweather's next fight or Cotto's next fight, regardless of who they're facing, because they're trying to sell us, if they're going to really going to try to sell us Miguel Cotto against Yorkis Gamboa on pay-per-view, that's ridiculous. But it looks like hopefully we're moving towards paying pay-per-view to see the fight, the actual fight. That's what we had to do to see Victor Postol against Terrence Crawford, which before the fight and on paper, it looked like it was a great fight. And that's what we're going to have to do to see Sergey Kovalev against Andre Ward. We're going to pay to see the fight, not to see the fighter, but to see the fight, and hopefully in 2017, that's the direction that we move towards as far as pay-per-view. So that might have been the silver lining to that dark cloud on May 5th, 2015, or the weekend of May 5th of 2015. That might have been the silver lining to that dark cloud that maybe pushed the business in that direction again.
Any thoughts about that, Gabriel? What do you think?
No, I think he actually kind of wrapped it up. I'm actually also kind of studying up here. There's a big story, regarding the WBC today. So I wanted to, in case you were asking about it, the next, from now till we open our show is September 30th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. I'm kind of on media blackout. So I've had a little bit of moments of catching up, and I'm reading over these emails from the WBC, and they don't make a hell of a lot. I also talked to somebody. That's why I was running late getting on the show, catching up on this stuff. I don't know if you – have you guys discussed this today or
no,
in the show?
About the WBC
ruling?
Is it about the testing they were talking about?
Well, they did two things. It was very convenient. They decided to put Povetkin in – the purse bid with remains to Vern, and they're going to put him in VADA's, a tailor-made testing program for a suspension for a year.
Right.
Well,
they
suspended him, but there's also now a purse bid. So I'm kind of confused. Is he?
Well, the suspension is with the VADA. That's what I thought. My understanding was the suspension is that he's got to test year-round with VADA. No, he can't go anywhere else. That's what I thought.
But they ordered – I'm reading from their press release.
Right.
An interim championship is ordered between the two highest available contenders, Povetkin and Bermain Stiverne. Free negotiation period begins today, and if there's no agreement, a purse bid will be conducted on Friday, September 16th. The split will be 50% for each
fighter. Well, WBC is basically saying the punishment is that you're going to be tested. That's the punishment. You know what I mean?
They were already testing him, and he tested positive.
Right.
And they're looking at their email.
That's the message, though, Gabriel. That's the clear message, is that you get tested. Listen, if you get caught, guess what's going to happen? You're going to have to test you all year round now again. Ooh.
We're going to make you do what you should be doing.
You know what,
okay.
Donald Trump? You know, you don't say what you mean, so guess what we're going to do to you now? Now we're going to fact check you. Ooh, this is stupid.
How do we cover him? I'm just kind of looking at, well, how amazing that you guys have kind of ruled in your own favor, in a sense. Why have a clean boxing program if you're not going to enforce it? They're looking at it and saying, well, he tested negative 3 times, and, you know, I don't want to bore everybody with how complicated it is. Maybe I'll write something about it, but, you know, he tested negative 3 times, then he tested positive, then he tested negative. That's called catching somebody. You know? That's what's called catching somebody.
But he didn't have red in his hands, you know?
And they pointed out, I thought was interesting in the press release, was that, well, as far as we know, he's never tested positive, you know, when he was in the Olympics in 2004. Now, what's been one of the – maybe people in boxing haven't been paying attention to this, but the Russian doping scandal has been a massive story.
Story,
for months,
right?
Now. People breaking into the lab, like they cut a hole in the wall so they could extract the samples and then siphon out the urine without messing with the bottle and then putting in clean urine. And they knew all this from insiders within the Russian doping program. So you're going to go now and cite and say, well, when they were testing this guy, he was all good. And we all know how easy it is to beat testing in the Olympics. I mean, the system hasn't really been upgraded that much. There's even been reports from Dick Pound, one of my favorite names, from WADA, talking about how the testing isn't very stringent. This was going back a couple of years, and he's written several reports since. So you can't really lean on that. But in boxing, when you got you know guys like the guy over at USA Today, they just run with the press release and think that that's reporting. I don't know how that guy can look himself in the mirror and cash his paychecks, because he's just not a very good reporter. This thing, I mean, I think people need to really look into that. Why don't they look into all the testing and all the science there involved? How many times did Povetkin get tested when he was in the Olympics? What tests did they run on him? Were they testing for Meldonium back then? No, they weren't. It wasn't a banned substance. Maybe he was on it back then. You know, but Sharapova was on it for like 10 years, right? So it's just the WBC, and then the turnaround and go, oh, and by the way, not only are we giving him a pass, but we're going to make money off the fact that Deontay Wilder is injured and can't fight. And so we're going to have an interim with this guy we just exonerated. I mean, it's just – and then they have the gall to say that, you know, we're not biased and, you know, this and that. Get the fuck out of here.
No
WBC,
shit.
I mean, I like what they're doing with their clean boxing program, but stop with the patting yourself on the back. And honestly, it's like if you're not really going to help, then don't pretend to. Because what that ultimately does is hurt the clean sport movement, not help it. So that's why
I agree. I definitely agree. That's why I don't really see anything happen with Memo Heredia as well. You know, the lashes that people in social media are coming after him, they're, the pun of jokes, but I don't see nothing happening to him. He's already passed the buck. That's the thing with boxing, though. God damn, that's just the thing with boxing. Anybody can pass the buck. It's meat. It's tainted meat. I didn't know it was I thought it was Gatorade. It's this and that. It's a revolving door.
Well, remember what I used to call it back in 2012 when this was all really hot, and I'd already been writing about it for like 2 years, but when we were having all those positive drug tests, I was like, this is a period of education for boxing. You know, you've only been testing since like 2000, 2001, and you have again, lazy ass media that used to just rely on the commission to let you know when somebody tested positive. Nobody bothered asking the athlete, huh, where'd you get the drugs? Who's it else is in your gym? All the pertinent questions going up the food chain the way you should in a drug case. Instead, they just, oh, this guy tested positive. I'm the first one with the news. There's a press release, and that's it, and they move on. And, yeah, you look at this memo case, and it's just flat-out ridiculous. I would refer people more to the next round this week, because we did a segment with Victor Conte on there and talking about – he basically just pulled back the curtain on that whole excuse of, I don't know what's in my body. I mean, going
we've
back
heard
to
that,
you know,
excuse.
The three of us have,
right.
A million times.
I mean, it's just, like I said, it's a broken record revolving door, you know. But, hey, really, let me, I'm going to change the tone really quick. I want to talk about, Carl Frampton. What a performance. I don't know about you guys. Do you guys, fight of the year? Do we give it that label? Do we finally, you know, give in and we're not worthy? We're not worthy? I mean, I thought it was an excellent fight. Now, Santa Cruz may be a bit bitter about it, but let me ask you, Felipe, is it a warrant for a rematch, or should Carl Frampton kind of just bathe in the glory and hold off for a bit, or should he give him an immediate rematch? Is this something that we should wait, that we should be clamoring for and demand at the moment?
No, I don't think so. I think that Carl Frampton, you know, I judged the fight. I scored the fight, and although some of the rounds were very close, I actually had Leo Santa Cruz winning, you know, 115-113. But I am no way.
You're not the only one that told me that. Yeah.
You know,
you know,
I
am
no way, shape, or form thought it was a robbery. I totally, if the judges saw Carl Frampton winning, I totally see that. I just saw some of the later rounds to be a little bit close, and I personally gave them to Leo Santa Cruz, but I can see how you could give them to Carl Frampton. So I don't think that Carl Frampton should give Leo Santa Cruz the rematch immediately after. I mean, he's the champ. He beat the guy. He beat the guy, so now Carl Frampton can do whatever he wants. And by the looks of it, it looks like he might want to face Lee Selby and try to unify the IBF title over there in England or in Ireland, and that's his prerogative. And I don't think that Leo Santa Cruz is in any position to demand for an immediate rematch, let alone for it to be in Los Angeles, you know? So
what does he do, though? Let me ask you guys this real quick. Leo Santa Cruz, he doesn't get the immediate rematch, okay? And you can't blame Carl to go, hey, I'm going to go after Lee, you know, and take it over. Because now, to me, it's a much bigger fight in terms for him if it's in the UK. You know, he's just going to draw just that much more because he beat a come-forward Mexican guy that was actually a Mexican kid that was bigger, and most folks were picking. So what does Leo do? Does he sit back and he waits to see what's the next move, or does he start planning to do it again with somebody else, even with Abner Mars? Abner Mars got a fight coming up, but if Abner is successful, does he take the winner of those of who Abner's facing, or does he just sit back and play, kind of have his little rant, you know, and say, oh, man, this is not fair. I want the rematch. What do you guys think?
Life ain't fair. You know, boxing is definitely not fair. Yeah. And, you know, Leo's had it his way for a long time. I just think you got to eat the crow. And I don't think Leo's the draw that Frampton is. So you lost, dude. You don't get to make demands just because you're with Al. To me, that's like Heyman privilege right there. And it's, you know, that's what that is. You've had it your
right.
way. You get to call your shots. And really, look at the way they were treating this. They were just crowning Leo. Oh, it's first fight in New York and all that. And to me, those were all bad moves. I wouldn't have gone to New York. That's just, you know, and so, no, I think he gets what he pays for. He's got to rebuild, get it back in the win column. I didn't have him winning. I thought Frampton, you know, but it was a close fight. And I could see it either way.
But I had Frampton winning, dude. I had him taken. I just liked the way he controlled it. I thought that, let me just put this on, because I got to eat crow, because I thought Leo was just going to be too strong, too big, come forward, and Carl was just not going to have enough pop to hold him off, man. But I got to tell you this. I mean, his Carl's performance to me was grade A.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't expect him to do half of the crap that he did. You know, I didn't expect him to really hold off Leo and take Leo some of Leo's biggest and best body shots like the way he did. He never really showed that he was declining and slowed down. He took some breathers in between, you know, some of the seconds in the minutes of the rounds. But overall, when he put his foot on the pedal, man, there was some full speed action there from both of the guys. And I got to take my hat off to Carl. I thought he was definitely the guy that made the surprise in Leo Santa Cruz's camp. I don't think they expected him to do the same thing as well.
You know, and I do consider it the fight of the year so far, because I was slightly more entertained with that fight than I was with the Francisco Vargas Orlando Salido fight. You know, I thought this one was a little bit more, I don't want to say dramatic, but it had a little bit more of a more nuances, because with Francisco Vargas and Orlando Salido, it was, you know, it was bombs away. I mean, yeah, they're technical and they did certain things, but I think it was a little bit more nuanced. What was going on between Leo Santa Cruz and Carl Frampton, for what the point that you just made, David. And I really hope that that Carl Frampton does go after Lee Selby before the end of the year, because in my opinion, if he ends up beating Lee Selby across the pond, then hands down, Carl Frampton is the fighter of the year.
Hands down. Yeah, there's no argument. I don't think anybody would have a really solid argument of saying he's not fighter of the year. He deserves it. I mean,
yeah, that's all that stuff is significant. Yeah, you got to give it to a guy when he's able to do that, you know, and to do it, you know, basically not on his home turf with Leo, you know, and just to do it that way. That dynamic, and he looked good at 126, man. That to me was the X factor, was what
right.
was that extra 4 pounds going to do for him? And it looked like it did a lot. Like, you know, he just had more spring in him, more energy, more strength, just the ability to kind of keep moving at those odd angles and pulling Leo into shots. It was just really masterful boxing, really beautiful stuff. And then it also had, like, you know, the stand and trade and fight aspect to it. That fight had it all. They didn't have, you know, big swings and you know, like in terms of, you know, knocking each other down or whatever, but the swings and momentum were real clear, and the adjustments were real clear. I've never been that big on Leo. I think he didn't have that many adjustments in him. He's got to go.
I've never seen adjustments
board.
In him. I've never seen adjustments. I mean, I think if you watch every fight that he's had, he comes forward, throws a lot. He's a volume puncher. You know, but let me ask you guys this, because most folks, I mean, even when Abner Morris fought Leo, it was come forward, try to get your punches in, try to hold off the whirlwind. What do you guys think that Frampton was able to do a bit different? Because, I mean, to me, he fought the way we thought Morris was going to do, you know, but he was able to get his punches off first. He was able to absorb punches that were thrown from Leo, and he was able to kind of maneuver where he wanted Leo to be at so that he can counterpunch him, because he did a little bit of both. He countered, but then he led, and it would go back and forth. But I want to hear your guys' take.
Gabriel?
Well, I thought he came out kind of fast, Frampton, and I liked that he kind of took it to him and didn't let – because Leo, I don't see, like, adjustments. It's more like he activates different parts of the plan, like you say. Like, he kind of gauges a guy, gauges his speed, moves forward. It's not like Margarito, kind of crowding, and then starts to let go with the volume. Because of the way Morris came at him, just throwing everything with the kitchen sink, that fight was, you know, it was combustible. It all of a sudden just, you know, exploded. This one, you know, Frampton was a little more crafty. Like, he was aggressive, but he was also moving, giving different angles and getting low. You know, to me, that was kind of had Leo off his game. And I think when Frampton slowed a little bit, then Leo was able to kind of get things going, you know, when he wasn't moving as much. But then he kind of went back to it. It was, like I said, it was just masterful boxing. And I think it showed that he had
it was the thing that I think most people didn't really look at because the fight was so shitty. The Quigg fight showed that Frampton's fine with fighting taller people. You know?
Yeah.
You can deal with a tall guy. You know, the big question was, would Leo be able to get off his volume? And would Frampton be able to deal with it? And the answer was yes. You know, well, the answer was no and yes. I don't think Leo let go as many punches as he normally does. You know, because the dude just didn't stay in front of him.
I think the big question now, because if he gets past Lee Selby, if Carl Frampton was to say, hey, let's do the rematch next year, could he do that performance again? I think that's what's going to be intriguing of a rematch here, Felipe.
I think he'd be better. I think he would do better against Santa Cruz in the rematch. Having seen him and felt his lack of power, I think he'd be able to be a little more bold and do some extra things where I don't know if Leo can improve that much.
I don't know either. I don't know either.
I think the difference between Carl Frampton and the other fighters that Leo Santa Cruz had been able to face and beat is that a lot of these guys thought that if they tried to keep up with Leo Santa Cruz's volume, that they could bang with him, you know, and possibly beat him that way, like Abner Mattis tried to do. But Carl Frampton, he banged with him, but he was, and Gabriel described it perfectly by calling him crafty. I didn't think he was that smart of a fighter. I had not seen that intelligence inside the boxing ring from him in the previous fight that I'd seen with him with Gonzalez Jr. and with Scott Quigg. But one thing that while I was watching the fight, and I commented with to Renzo, who I was watching with my co-host on Boxeo Tijuana, was that, man, this guy is really smart because not only is he countering very well, counterpunching, but he's counterpunching with the right punches, you know, which can also make a difference. And that's what I think made Frampton take the win.
He passed on. Right. It was like when they'd get in exchanges, he wouldn't just throw back to throw back. It was like he'd kind of counter. He'd wait for – he'd pass on a punch and be like, that's not the one, and then boom, there's the one. You're exactly right.
Exactly.
It was – yeah, it was
– Well, he was aware of all his surroundings. Really, yeah, he was really aware of all his surroundings. Like, you know, he knew exactly how far he was away from the ropes with touching his back. He knew exactly, you know, when Leo was going to come forward and throw a body shot. I mean, no, I take no credit away from Leo, though. The guy never gave up. And I think that's what something that is going to be appreciated down the line when it's at the end of his career. Because I think it's fair to say we haven't seen Leo in a bad, bad fight. The guy does come to fight. You know, he really does try to leave it in the ring. I mean, if he doesn't get the rematch with Frampton, I would want to see. I want to see how Mars has got a tough challenge coming up. I'd like to see either one of the guys that he's going to fight, that's coming up, go against Leo Santa Cruz. I don't see why that can't happen.
Yeah, but we are talking about the Al Haymon universe. We might well see Leo Santa Cruz wait for that rematch with Carl Frampton. But I wanted to ask you guys a question. You know, they recently, I think it was last week, they recently announced the pay-per-view for the Canelo Alvarez-Liam Smith fight, which includes Jojo Diaz, Oscar De La Hoya, and Jason Quigley, all good up-and-coming prospects. But what I was thinking and what I've discussed with some people is, like, unless they put them in some, like, you know, quote-unquote crossroads fight where another undefeated prospect.
Yeah,
or something that is really going to make them catapult their career against a tough, tough opponent, you know, I don't see that being pay-per-view at all.
You know, I mean, it goes back, Felipe, and you know, we used to bring this up, is saying that Golden Boy is such a young promotional group that they kind of show their youth. And if they do that, if it's just another pay-per-view showcase, this really shows their age, because they're not building these fighters the way you should build them. I want to see them in crossroad fight. I want to see them how well they do crossing the street when there's vehicles speeding down the lanes. That's why we watch these types of fights and stuff, you know. I mean, their Estrella TV matches are decent. I wouldn't say they're like the greatest things. They're decent, but we already know We always I hate going to fight events where we know that the red buckle team is going to beat the blue buckle team at all times.
I hate it.
But look, they were going to give us a rematch of Yoshihiro Kamegai against Jesus Soto Caraz, and they took it away at the Forum on September 10th. You know, I mean, that in itself, I mean,
that was a stupid move.
Pay per view worthy, but it was at least we get to see that fight. I mean, the first fight was so great. I'm not, you know, I'm okay spending, you know, $40, $50, $60 and seeing that fight again because it was so good. But I mean, I think that they officially made I think they made Diego de la Hoya against Orlando del Valle, a Puerto Rican fighter.
We had him on.
For pay per view, that's not really enticing me to get those 320s out of my
wallet. That's an Estrella TV match. That's at one of their Club Nokia matches. I don't know. Anyways, hey guys, we're gonna end the show here on Leaving the Ring. 320s always.
That's a good night in Mexicali. 320s, you know. I mean.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go
on the wrestling right now.
Right.
You're practically a millionaire with those 320s in TV right now.
Although, the more Donald Trump talks, the more the peso goes up, though. It values.
Oh,
that's
no. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Fight Fans. Well, hey, thanks as always tuning in. We didn't patch it in some Fight Fans. I'm sorry. We had a lot of topics to talk about and catch up with here. What did we learn? Well, it's not really Cotto calling out Gamboa. Pacquiao, it's no worry about HBO because they don't really have a brand that they're trying to push in boxing. Memo Heredia is not going to really anything. Nothing's going to really happen. Hey, you're watching the Olympics?
Oh.
We're not. I'm not. But what are you going to say, Felipe?
I got an idea. We also learned that David Duenas can do a pretty good Pacquiao. So, my thought, Guerra Montoya writes a one-scene, one-act play with Steve Kim playing Barber. I mean, David Duenas playing Manny Pacquiao.
I'll work on my Dela Hoya impersonation, and we'll have to work that out somehow.
That would be awesome. You know?
Oh, he's a very tough opponent. I'm in the best shape of my life.
That's pretty good, Gary.
Oh, we could go to dinner right now.
The premise is you're Oscar De La Hoya, Steve King is Bob Arum, and David Duenas does Manny Pacquiao, and it's a whole negotiation between Top Rank and Golden Boy when they gave him that.
And you're going to what? You're going to play Canelo? You're going to play Canelo?
No.
All right. Anyways, hey, like always, a lot of fun here. We'll be back next week. Every Monday, you got the next round. Every Tuesday, in the Square Circle with, you know, our third co-host of the Three Amigo here, Felipe Leon. And every Wednesday, you got Leaving the Ring. And then every other week, you got the 2-Minute Round, which is a great episode of All Dedicated Boxing to Females. So next week, we'll catch up with you guys. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. I am out, fellas. As always, fun. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace.